You're listening to podcasts from the Congressional Internet Caucus Advisory Committee, www.netcaucus.org.
Let me introduce Shane, too, so it's going to be a moderator.
And for you all in the back, there's a little space if you'd just rather come be in the room. We'd welcome that. If you want to walk in, I'll give you a second while I'm introducing everybody. Or if you really like standing in the hallway, good luck. There are a couple chairs up front, too. So I'm excited, and unlike Tim's a little bit of a naysayer on this issue, it's not going to be Byzantine when we're done, and there would never be crickets in the room. This is a fascinating topic. So I am going to introduce our panelists and let you know, I'm just going to give you their titles. All the information in their bios are on the Net Caucus website, and that's just a hidden agenda blind project for the netcaucus.org website. When this topic gets talked about in my office about a year ago, this is what I would hear. I'd hear ICT, ITU, ITR, WCIT, WSIS, WTPF, which would make me think WTF. I understood certain layers of it. I'm very steep in the world of ICANN, so I speak ICANNese, but I've had to learn how to speak Wicket and possibly WTPF. And this group actually are native to this area. I'm very excited. This is a panel that I could actually have a one-on-one dialogue with any of these guys for an hour and learn something. So we're very honored to have them here, and I would highly recommend that they're all here in Washington and a good resource for you if you would like to learn more about this topic after today. So on the panel today, we have Fiona Alexander, who is the Associate Administrator of the National Telecommunications Information Administration, or known as NTIA. Dick Beard, who is the Senior Deputy United States Coordinator of the International Communications and Information Policy at the Department of State. Former Ambassador David Gross, who is now a partner at Wiley Ryan Fielding, former from the State Department. Commissioner Robert McDowell, currently with the Federal Communications Commission. Thank you for continuing to serve. We're so excited to have you there. And Sally Wentworth, who is Senior Manager for Public Policy and Internet Society, also from the State Department. So these people really do know what they're talking about. I thought we'd start with you, Rod. You wrote a piece for the Wall Street Journal earlier this year, which kind of was a wake-up call for a lot of people who don't toil in this area. What inspired you to write that piece and get our attention?
Well, ultimately, the person responsible for the spark behind this latest, all the blame I think falls to David Gross.
Thank you.
He invited me to a lunch in Brussels. In early November, I was in London and Brussels, and in both places, actually, but the first place in London, I got a briefing by someone named Dominic Lozansky, the Taxpayers Alliance, in London, about the concerns about just how well-organized the pro-international regulation forces were, and that in years past, as David and Jim and Dick especially can tell you, and Sally as well, in years past, there have been other attempts to try to expand the IQ's jurisdiction of the space or some other method of UN resolutions are coming out from different angles than just the ITU. And the U.S. and the U.K. or some allies have been able to table it, usually through its incredible knowledge of parliamentary maneuvers of international law. But this time seemed different, and I sensed a great deal of fear and apprehension from folks in London and in Brussels at the lunch group and the turning point for coming. I think I had food falling out of my mouth because I was so much in shock as to how long the others were. So then I came back to the States and I started making some phone calls around, Allie and some others, not necessarily within the FCC's immediate sphere of influence, and sure enough, there was a great deal of concern and alarm, and things didn't seem to be different. So I was sort of surprised this wasn't getting more attention, and in fact, it just raised awareness of it.
I think you did a great job. You definitely got piqued attention. And as for those of you who are not following the House Energy and Commerce Committee, several of the people here testified last week, and their testimony is excellent, so I would also point you to that on the House Energy and Commerce website. Dick, can you give us a little history as to what we're talking about here and how the process works? Because those of us who are congressionally steeped, that's a whole foreign country over there, and we do it very well.
Thank you very much, Shane, and it's a pleasure being here, and it's a remarkable indication of success of your organization as well as the interest in this, subject that the room is full. I have had an opportunity recently of describing what the ITRs are to a number of audiences, and I'm delighted to do that now. And
can you start with what's an ITR?
How do you spell ITR?
International Telecommunications Regulations. There are actually very few, and this is one of them, treaties internationally dealing with telecommunications. And the history of the International Telecommunications Regulations go back very far. They go back to 1875, when the first treaty dealing with telegraph services was agreed upon in Paris. From that time to the present, there has been a remarkable stability in terms of what the International Telecommunications Regulations do and their predecessor, the telegraph, did. Namely, they are designed to and agreed upon by sovereign states that transmissions of telecommunications that go to the public will be the focus of the treaty, and that's important. This is about public telecommunications. That the messages that are transmitted should be remain private, and that there should be an agreement among member states to provide a sufficiency of infrastructure globally to sustain communications globally. That there should be a basis among the member states, and this is the traditional formulation, for how revenues are shared as a result of the transmission of telecommunications. These sorts of, and it, as well, is that notwithstanding, and this is very important, notwithstanding whatever else we've agreed to at the treaty conference, or whether it's in 1875 or in 2012, notwithstanding what we agreed to, there are two things that are absolutely adhered to. First, that member states do nothing to give up the sovereignty that they have in terms of their national regulation. And secondly, notwithstanding what we've agreed to, member states may enter into special arrangements depending upon the circumstances as required. The International Telecommunications Regulations in 2012 will be debated. They will revise the most recent version, which was done in 1988. So you can see that these revisions do not occur frequently. They occur in many instances about once a generation. Let me just make a few other points as to what's involved. This is a treaty conference, which means member states attended. And I want to underscore the importance of that because the motivation towards consensus derives from the fact that member states come to protect their sovereignty. So, and the second point I think is also important in this regard is that there is a presumption that you consent to communicate. So insofar as you're consenting to communicate, there is already a motivation to find a consensus.
Now, the 1988 version of the ITRs, as they will be revised in 2012, what are we seeing in terms of proposals? First of all, let me make it perfectly clear from the point of view of the United States. We do not think that the United Nations is the place for the day-to-day operations of the Internet. That is a very clear position for the United States, and we have taken this position and articulated it repeatedly. The UN does a number of important things, training, development, as a forum for international discussion. But the day-to-day operations of the Internet should not be one of the roles that the UN plays. So as the meeting takes place in Dubai in December, these member states, approximately the potential for 193 member states to come, that's the full complement of member states at the ITU, and they will come and they will debate these issues any regulator would understand and identify with. Now, that has to do with fraud. It has to do with issues regarding sufficiency of infrastructure and of access to that infrastructure by users, for example. But these are examples. Roaming becomes an issue, particularly for the Europeans and in our own hemisphere. So these are the kinds of issues that seem to be coming forward at this stage, but we will see other proposals over the next 3 to 4 months. And the State Department, in cooperation with all the relevant agencies, I'm pleased to say, the FCC and NTIA are very much involved, as well as DOD and others. We have a core delegation process. We will have our head of delegation, who has already been announced, Terry Kramer, who will be on board in the third week of June. And we will continue this already rather intensive preparation leading us to December.
Thank you. Can you explain this process to us, if you can explain the difference between interagency, intergovernmental, and then the new buzzword in this space, which is multi-stakeholder, and how that works, and whether they can help us grow, because that's a lot of confusion that area.
Sure. So interagency versus intergovernmental actually make that a little bit better for a take. But, so as we always do for all of our international meetings on any issue, we run a very robust interagency process, whether it's in the State Department or one of the other agencies. So we coordinate extensively throughout the very past executive branch and also with our independent regulatory agencies before we do anything on all these issues. Intergovernmental would be then some of these institutions that we participate in are open only to governments in the case of the UN system and the ITU specifically. There are 193 countries that are members now of the ITU. And the ITU has the option for non-governments to be sector members and to join and pay to join. But when it comes to negotiations and things like a treaty negotiation, only governments get to speak. So that's the concept of sort of a purely intergovernmental discussion. Dick, actually, when he runs this process, and we didn't speak to the actual delegation itself when he formed that in the fall, we'll have members of industry and others on our delegation. So I don't know if you can add to that later. But, and the other issue, the other term is multi-stakeholder. So multi-stakeholder is a term of art and one that we love and adore at NTIA. It's what guides everything that we do on most of these issues. And we start with the idea at NTIA that all internet issues need to be addressed in a multi-stakeholder fashion. Strictly, we've given many speeches and spoken to a great length as to why and how this is important to us. And I would encourage you to read those. But really, we find that with technology changing so quickly, that the best way and the most efficient way to deal with issues like this is to make sure that everyone's involved in the development of policy as we go forward. So this multi-stakeholder model is a mantra at MTA. We're applying it domestically in the context of privacy as we go forward implementing the administration's white paper on commercial data privacy. We've applied it for 10-plus years in the context of the domain name system and ICANN, the other world acronyms that Shane mentioned earlier. And we apply that to how we look at any internet policy issue that's coming up. Dick's giving you a good overview of the ITRs, and what we've seen so far are proposals to update things like fraud, misuse, roaming, very traditional telecom issues. We do see, and as Professor McCall pointed out, there is a risk potentially of proposals coming in, and we'll see that later this year as we go towards Dubai, a slippery slope of did you adjust a phrase here or there, and then does the scope of this institution or this treaty extend beyond more traditional telecom worlds? And that causes problems for us. We don't think there are places to develop rules for the internet record in that environment. I think it's important to keep in mind, too, that the crux of this issue, the ITU is the oldest institution in the U.S. system, I believe, I could be wrong, but it was for telegraphs, and then it was for telephones. And the natural inclination of any institution, as we know, is to evolve and take on new issues. And I think it's fair to say that there are some countries and some folks that would like to do that in some way or another. You know, the ITU is already involved in training and development and things like that, so I think that is something that we know. The question is, what are we going to be getting from other folks as they come forward? And we'll be working very diligently in our delegation process and consulting with folks and working with allies. The important thing also to understand is these UN negotiation regional blocks are very important. It's very important that you work with your colleagues in our region, which is there's something called CTEL, the Inter-American Commission on Telecommunications, but also coordinate with the other regions of the world as well, because ultimately this does come down to sort of a collection of what is the group of the whole want, and so it's important to keep that in mind as we go forward. But again, for us, the basic principle is multi ITRs as those issues come up that will sort of be guiding us. This is an open organization. question is, the participants are some of the finest engineering minds in the world. It's global. It meets around the world. But the meetings are actually not what's important about the IETF. What's important about the IETF is the output. The output, like I said, are technical protocols that are done in a consensus fashion, an open fashion, a transparent fashion, and really strive towards technical excellence, market-driven market, or solutions that are tested in the marketplace. They are not the result of government fiat. They are not guided by government decree, but rather are responding to and developing the technical capacity to make the internet grow. If you step back and think about that, what's important about that is that the goal is the continued growth and evolution of the internet. The folks who kind of started the Internet Engineering Task Force, some of the people that many of you may have heard of, people like Vint Cerf, people like Bob Kahn, and others who were very engaged in the early days of the internet. What they wanted was a model that would allow that growth, allow the networks to continue to evolve, to meet new challenges, to support new ideas, to support a global community online. And in a way that reflected the desires and the ingenuity of the people who use it. And so that's what the IETF is about. I think the IETF is not alone in that. The internet community, the way the internet has grown, reflects that mindset. And so multi-stakeholderism is not, in our view, an end in and of itself. It is the mechanism by which the internet grows. It is the mechanism by which technical excellence is achieved. By bringing the right people to the table, by bringing the best minds, by bringing the best ideas forward, whether it's in a policy process, a technical solution, solving a problem, developing a new idea, you bring the people to the table and you deploy it in the marketplace and you see if it works. It's permissionless. And it's important that we not take that model for granted. When we are in policy discussions, it doesn't have to be that way. But it has been that way, and that is the reason that many of us are in this room that we want to continue to support that model. I think in terms of the WICCID, in terms of this discussion of the ITRs, where the Internet Society is focused is the extent to which some of the proposals that have been put forward to the treaty conference could in some way impact that model of development, could in some way affect the ability of the Internet to continue to grow and to continue to evolve. Not all of the proposals do that. Not all of the countries are coming to the table with that objective in mind, and I do think that's an important point to make. Many countries, the vast majority of countries that we talk to, they want more of the internet. Now, we may disagree that the ITRs or a treaty or is a treaty process is the best way to achieve that, but for many countries, they want more of it. So the real question is, and I think the question that the internet community is doing its part to try to address is, what are the strategies that need to be in place? We don't believe that a static treaty is the appropriate way to achieve more internet. But we do recognize the role of international cooperation. We do recognize the role that multiple stakeholders can have in achieving the outcome that governments say that they want. And so, you know, the Internet Society is engaged in the process on a global basis. And we hope and we think this is an extremely important conversation to have. We hope there are more of these worldwide. The other thing I would just leave with you is don't take this process for granted. Many countries need to have a similar discussion in their countries about what is their member state going to say, what is the objective, what's the outcome that they're trying to achieve for their citizens. This is a very important conversation to happen.
So I'm afraid to talk about you, but I thought with that, Shane, you mentioned that you got several emails, a lot of calls from your members, if you'd like to make the comments today.
Yeah, we did hear, I should note that our community, that the Internet Society is global. We have over 55,000 members worldwide, and they were watching. Many of our members were watching the hearing, and I think the committee should be commended for making that hearing public and webcast. And a number of our members did mention to me that
resource. They also, on their website, have a great one-page model that explains a lot of these organizations and how they interact with each other, and it's like software board. So that's another resource for you guys to be able to go. Okay, so that was a half an hour. That was a 7 hour. I need for you to work side of the week. You can understand a little bit more about this. So we're going to open it up for questions. I know they're right here. So.
First of all, it's an open process. It will be, I think it's fair to say, it will follow the traditional model. It will be an open process. That is, anyone from the private sector who is interested, first of all, they can get involved now. Mary Gordon has been very involved sitting back there in helping to lead the process through this first very initial phase. It's been a very open process where anybody can participate, I believe, and volunteer their views and the like. As it goes to a more formal stage, I'll leave it to Dick to talk a bit about the actual formation of the delegation. But I would encourage, from my perspective, anyone I know that the members of the coalition that I have the honor of chairing will be actively involved in seeking individually to participate. I would note, and I'm putting my old hat on more than my new hat, I would note that it's important to recognize as you think about participating, which I strongly encourage people to do, is that if you are chosen to become a member of the delegation, you then no longer are representing your own interest. That is, you're a member of the U.S. government delegation, which is, I think, a great honor and a great privilege. But it also means that you're no longer representing your company, your congressman, your NGO, or whatever. You are there as part of the U.S., representing the U.S., subscribing to the positions taken after presumably the process and thought as to what those positions ought to be. So it is a shift. I don't want to make it look like you have a delegation, you get to speak whatever position you had coming into it. That may or may not happen. But Dick may want to talk a little bit more about the formation of the delegation process itself.
Thank you. Yes, we will be forming a delegation in September. We will solicit interest from many of you and all of you. A delegation is a chosen right, or privilege, I should say. It's not a right, it's a privilege, and you are chosen. And then you will participate on behalf of the United States of America, as David Gross has indicated. We are currently operating in two forms. One is the International Telecommunications Advisory Committee, which solicits advice from the private sector on a whole range of issues regarding the WICCAT, the World Conference on International Telecommunications Preparation. And as I indicated, we do also have a core delegation of relevant agencies operating in parallel. David has very rightly and appropriately indicated that Marion Gordon, Terry, maybe you should just raise your hand. Marion has been doing a marvelous job in leading the process and also has been leading the ITAC, the International Telecommunications Advisory Committee process, leading up to the stage where we are now. proposals, which we think, well, we think are manageable, are also difficult. But they're difficult in a classical sense, just having to do with revenue and having to do with fraud and those kinds of issues. We don't in any way, we are always cautious. We're always, as Ambassador Revere said in the hearings on Friday, we are always vigilant. We are vigilant to any proposal coming in that would put at risk the stability and the integrity of the Internet. It's an absolute position for us. If I were to judge the top issues as I see them today in terms of proposals, quite clearly roaming is an issue that is being brought in by not only the Europeans, but also a number of countries in our own hemisphere. Fraud is the second issue that seems to get a lot of attention, and that's coming in certainly from the Middle East and also from the Pacific. Network security is probably a third issue, and that is getting a lot of attention, particularly from Eastern Europe. And it has, and as well as the Middle East, and it has variations. If I were to limit myself to three, I would say those are certainly top three. But immediately following that, and we haven't quite seen, I don't think, the full nature of the proposals regarding how revenue is to be shared, and we fully anticipate some sorts of proposals coming in, in particularly from Africa. But I would say those are the top, certainly the top four issues at this point. I'm not going to know for sure exactly how to gauge it, because obviously the world, as we know, is not ever going to come to an end, I hope, regardless of the outcome of this process. And I certainly agree with all the statements that Dick just made. I would note that some of us are concerned because, as the Secretary General of the IQ has made clear, and I think appropriately clear, this is a negotiation amongst sovereign states, member states of the IQ. And they are free, within certain clear parameters, but they're free to say and do what they think is in their best interest. And how that will play out over time, we have yet to see. So I would note that, for example, yesterday, one of the submissions was made, publicly made, by behalf of the Arab states. And there's many pieces to their submission, so I'm not trying to be encyclopedic here. But I would note that they are proposing, as of yesterday, a change in definition. This is not new news. I mean, they've been talking about this for some time, in which the definition of telecommunications, which has been understood to basically be telephone-related, they would propose formally to change that to telecommunications / ICT, information communications technologies. And in so doing, they propose to add to the definition, which is in the Constitution, they would propose here to change the definition to include the term including processing. Now, without trying to import U.S. domestic law into the rest of the world, here in the United States, that term could reasonably be read, maybe appropriately be read, as extending it to the things that we believe are Internet-related. So that would be the definition that we obviously have. What the impact of that would be would depend on many things. Again, I'm not suggesting that this is going to be adopted, but I just point out that these are serious proposals made by serious countries trying to deal with what they believe are serious issues. And I'm glad they will be taken very seriously by Nick and everybody else.
Just to build on the comments that Dick and David just made, as I said, we're looking at the proposals from the perspective of the extent to which they could impact on the Internet. And to David's point, the proposal to modify the definition of telecommunications in the treaty will have reverberations throughout the treaty elsewhere. So, for example, if we change the definition of telecommunications, there's now a proposal of a scope, maybe all existing, emerging, and future telecommunication facilities and services. So obviously, the issue related to definitions, there are several definitions existing in the current treaty. There are proposals for a host of new definitions. As with any regulatory proceeding or legislative proceeding, the definitions are the first place you look to find the scope of whatever it is that you're reading. And so the definitions are extremely important to the point that they haven't actually had the actual process even really begun to deal with those yet because it's such a complex set of issues. From the Internet Society's perspective as well, and Shane and Sam were speaking a little bit on behalf of the technical community, there is a proposal to make I2T recommendations, which are the standards, the telecommunication standards that come out of the I2T, to make those mandatory, or make some subset of those to be mandatory. Again, coming back to what I said earlier, we are, are the home of the Internet Engineering Task Force. There are a host of organizations within the standards ecosystem that work on different aspects of network standards. And the notion that one standards organization would be made preeminent or supersede the others would really fly in the face of how the technical standards process works today and really accommodates new and changing technologies. So, and again, the I2 is a political process fundamentally for member states. So, again, the idea that standards developed in a member state environment would be made mandatory, I think, would have real implications for global networks.
$800 billion. So it's already times larger than the domestic commercial service fund. precise as to
to denigrate it in some way. I think that it exists. It is an organization that countries look to, developed and developing countries, in a host of aspects of their lives, as we all know. The UN works in that, and it's a very broad reach. And countries, particularly developing countries, but not exclusively, do look to the UN as a source of information, as a source of action in certain cases. So the real question, I think, is what's the appropriate action if we're talking about these issues for the UN? What's the appropriate role of the UN? And not to spend too much time being negative about it, but rather what can they do? What's constructive? So the reality is, as we noted, countries have several challenges when it comes to connectivity. Countries are trying to grapple with different ways and different strategies for how they participate in the internet economy. And these are things that internet society is active on, the community is active on. These are important conversations to have. We want there to be more internet deployment worldwide. We don't, as I said, think that a treaty is the best way to achieve that outcome. We don't think that UN governance of the internet is appropriate. But we do need to find constructive ways to have the dialogue. I think this is a point where we should mention a bright light, which is the Internet Governance Forum. This is an environment where governments and different stakeholders from around the world do come together every year to try to work through some very complex issues in the internet space. Those conversations are then replicated at the regional level. And then further replicated at the national level. And that's the kind of dialogue that's very important. The UN has had a role in that space. Having said that, when we get into an environment where it's member states only making decisions that have operational impacts on the internet, we don't, at the Internet Society, think that that is going to achieve the desired end of more connectivity, more internet growth. So it's a balance.
A little bit of what you said. Again, the multi-stakeholder environment is where we want to see how these issues discussed, which is why we are very big supporters of the IGF. Maybe do a plug for Marilyn, who's here, who organizes the US IGF. If you guys are interested, you should talk to Marilyn afterwards. I think it's in July this year. We do one domestically as well. Any international negotiation with the Just Say No position is a successful endeavor. So the question is really important as to what's the alternative, what's a different vision that people who care about the internet could put forward. So at the Internet Society, we've been taking that question fairly seriously,
principles that you were talking about in terms of competition, localization, privatization, these are things that have happened since 1988. They aren't reflected in the current treaty. We need to maybe think through what's the best way to include those concepts in a revised treaty going forward. In terms of strategies for developing countries, the Internet exchange points are something that Internet Society works very hard on, working with stakeholders in countries to figure out what's the strategy to build connectivity in your country. There's a policy and regulatory approach. There are technologies. There's a technical approach. There's working with industry to keep traffic at home, to build domestic capacity, local content, local infrastructure. That's ultimately what it takes to participate in the global internet. And so these aren't easy. They're not necessarily going to be solved with three lines in a treaty. These are hard things to do, but countries have done them. And we've been able to demonstrate that there are economic benefits that flow from that development. And I think that's the message that we need to get out more forcefully and encourage countries to take the steps. Again, just say no is probably a pretty tough sell.
Is that your way of being part of the multi-stakeholder process? No question. Okay, just check. Over here, do you have a question? Right here. Internet issues are very popular. You know that.
Has been going on for a long time. It doesn't end in December. The treaty in December is about the obligations of the member states that sign it. In
2013, the EI2 will hold a World Telecom Policy Forum on internet public policy issues. That is a much broader scope, and the scope is actually quite clear on that one. We don't have to wonder what they're talking about there. That is a non-binding forum. It is open, reasonably open to non-government stakeholders, and the Internet Society has been asked to be on the group of experts, so we're happy that we can participate in that. They will issue opinions. Those opinions are not binding, but those opinions set the stage for, in 2014, the IT Plenipotentiary Conference. The IT Plenipotentiary Conference is where the IT maps out its program of work for the coming four-year period, the rules of procedure, and all of those sorts of things. So I think it's fair to say that the discussions that happened in 2012 will feed into the discussions that will happen in 2013. Very important in 2014 at the Plenipotentiary Conference, which is again another treaty event. Mixed in there, just because that's not enough, the World Summit on the Information Society makes a comeback with revisions or a reconsideration of whether we met the objectives of WSIS and possibly even whether WSIS itself. All of that is happening. There are broader UN discussions happening in ECOSOC and the General Assembly. And then, as I said, the Bright Light, which is the Internet Governance Forum, happens every year. So, in terms of decision making, though, we're on a pathway for several years where these discussions are going to be front and center, and the incrementalism is going to be apparent, the desire by countries to strengthen this agenda within the UN.
Of course, as we all know, is the
45 people, and they will be principally from the U.S. private sector. It will be the role of government to facilitate their discussions, and that will allow them then to do the real work of the ITU, which will be the technical work over the next 4 years. Thank you for that question.
Question here.
That we're engaged in. Because of the good work of Aaron Gordon and others in CTEL, our hemisphere has come out with an inter-American proposal.
What's that have to be called? CTEL is?
CTEL is the Telecommunications Commission of the OAS, the Organization of American States. It's where our hemisphere comes together for purposes of preparation for conferences at the ITU, for example, and does other work related to regional interests in telecommunications. That group, which is so important to us in preparation for the World Conference on International Telecommunications, has supported, as an inter-American proposal, no change to the definition of telecommunications. We are now joined by the Asia-Pacific telecommunity. No change in the definition of telecommunications. We're joined by the Europeans. No change in the definition of telecommunications. So at this stage, at least three regions of the world have joined together to support no change. I make this point to indicate the ongoing work of the Department of State, Commerce, and the FCC in soliciting and eliciting support and coalitions that are going to be so essential to us for success at the conference. And this is an ongoing process that is virtually daily, but it also indicates the nature of the conference itself. These regions are going to come to divide, they're going to debate, and the conclusion is not foregone. That is to say that there are these three regions supporting no change, and that should be a very good message for us in this room.
Just to add, we have something that we started preparing, actually, we've been preparing this for a long time. We just started. And one of the things we talked about doing was seeing if we get some broader consensus on our approach to internet policymaking. And we're very lucky to have a master Ormeau in Paris. And we worked through the OECD process to get the OECD to adopt these internet policymaking principles. And that, too, will help sort of guide a lot of the countries as they prepare for these things. The scope of the principles, you know, cover a variety of issues, but there are a couple provisions that relate in those principles to this discussion. The idea that you support multi-stakeholder processes, that they be transparent, that they be democratic, that an international treaty regime could actually hurt the internet as opposed to helping it. This is all contained in these OECD internet policymaking principles that were adopted last June, and then were turned into a recommendation in the OECD world, which means that member states are assessed on them, and also any new members joining the OECD, I think Russia is currently in discussion talks, will be examined in the context of this as well. So we've had a variety of tools that we've been working on, you know, for the last couple of years as we go into this discussion.
Yeah. Let me also just briefly underscore one of the points that Dick was making. Not only, I think, the administration has done a terrific job, probably along with our by Commissioner McDowell, of reaching out and finding common ground on extraordinarily important issues so far. But also, you know, they have been working on procedural issues there. As any lawyer would know, it could be as important as the substance. So, for example, there are strong arguments they've made on that definition of telecommunications that I referred to before, that in fact, because the ITU's constitution, which is the primary document for the ITU, defines that term in a relatively narrow fashion, traditional fashion, that the conference coming up in this December cannot change it. That will be one of the arguments that will be made. And Ambassador Revere, in his testimony, I think, did an excellent job of talking about how, in the U.S. U.S. government's view, that the issues to be negotiated should be circumscribed by the traditional scope of the existing document. That is, it should not be used as a way of going passive. So I want to underscore, I think, the terrific work that's been done, the important work, both substantively and procedurally. But I then always go back, as Commissioner McDowell pointed out, just because we take that position doesn't make it a universal view. And there'll be lots of extraordinarily important and difficult work to be done, as all of us up here have done in the past. These are always difficult negotiations, in part because the stakes are so great. And they're so great because of the tremendous success of the internet. Related activities to everyone globally. This is a serious, serious economic, social, political, and economic set of issues.
Some carriers are having a debate as to whether or not they can slice open the ice. charge, talk to your application providers, maybe ever since the tariff regime or something that's maybe working this out like. But I have a force effective IT or other actual people. So I think we need to be very careful with that. I know we outlined at least three regions where we think support is rock solid, but different is expertise. Who has been very active at this at the ITU. The president of Costa Rica has committed to this issue as well, as have many others. I believe, Steve, you have also had conversations with the ITU on possible collaborative activities. This is an area that we all see as exceedingly important, and your organization has been a leader in this. We think that the ITU can serve a very helpful function in bringing the kind of quality to the internet that we all support in the area of child online protection in particular. But we are firm that it should not creep into content control, and we have made that point on a number of occasions.
One last question.
Spend hours in Geneva at the ITU. Sorry. Exactly. It's important to understand the ITU is not monolithic. There's multiple parts to it. And one of the things that we've always supported and think correctly is the membership-driven component of the ITU, and one of the reasons that we participate so much in the institution. And there can be some tensions between a membership-driven process versus a staff-driven process. And we see that pop up in every institution. It's not a creature of the UN or unique to that. And this is one of those areas where there's a little bit of back and forth where it's important to look at that to the specifics of the proposals as they come up. But for sure, there's always been agreement that the IT did not do content. I think that's a very strong view of the membership overall.
Does work to advantage of forcing compromises, and it compromises.
solicit him